On this week's Ludini Rock and Roll Circus podcast, Lily, Ludini, and the Hawk will discuss 10 or maybe a few more things that you didn't know about Pantera's vulgar display of power. Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Everybody, welcome back to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. My name is Lou Lombardi, a.k.a. Ludini, and we're going to have a lot of fun today talking about one of the absolute greatest, and I do mean one of the absolute greatest heavy metal bands of all time. That is, of course, Pantera.
Of course.
It is Vulgar Display of Power, which was their biggest selling album. On the anniversary today, ironically or coincidentally, I should say, it's the anniversary of the death of Dimebag Darrell, Pantera guitarist. And if you don't know who Dimebag Darrell is, there's a rock you've probably been living under.
You can go to the cooking podcast; it's probably on another channel.
Yeah, what Lily said. So, anyways. We're going to be getting into that in a few minutes. A few things. Let's take care of a little business first. First of all, you're listening to Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. You can get more information and a free download of an EP at lulombardimusic.com. Go to lulombardimusic.com. If you love great guitar-driven rock from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and even today, you're really going to dig the EP. And you're also going to get access to our private group and all kind of cool stuff and cool emails with great information about awesome music. So go to lulombardimusic.com. Also, I want to give a shout out to Wolf's Customs. There is no reason, guys, to be getting up on stage and playing a boring looking guitar. Dimebag Darrell did not play a boring looking guitar. He had that badass Dean that he played with. In it, he had different ones with different crazy paint jobs on them. You can get the same thing by talking to wolfscustoms.online. They could do a custom paint job on any instrument, guitar of course, but any other instrument. Keith's had some work done on drums, etc. So you want to check them out at wolfscustoms.online. And of course, Rock Rage Radio. We love you guys. We're proud to be part of the Rock Rage Radio family. If you love great heavy guitar driven rock like bands like Pantera, then you can just download the app at rockrageradio.com and just rock out 24/7. You never have to miss anything. So check it out. All right, we've got the whole power trio again this week. Woot. We've got Keith the Hawk Hawkins from New Orleans. What's going on, Hawk?
What's up? How's it going?
It's going.
Nothing. Today is another date of depression, too.
Oh, no. What's wrong? Why are you depressed, buddy?
He's not.
No, you're not depressed.
No.
You're bad.
He's
you're
talking about someone
about,
else.
About passed. Dimebag.
So somebody else was killed on his day.
Yes, Jay Lennon. Jay Leno.
No, Jay Leno's still rolling, man. I think, okay. You know, he's doing well, counting his money in his cars. But yeah, John Lennon was killed on this day too by some wackadoo.
Two guys murdered by wackadoos.
Yeah, and we will get it. We could talk about that a little bit later. We usually hit this day in music a little bit later on in the podcast. But you're right, Keith. It is the anniversary of the death of John Lennon, the assassination, if you will. So, kind of a weird day here for music. But some cool birthdays and things like that. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. We also have Lily V6. What's up, Lil?
What's up?
I went to a Krampus party over the weekend.
What?
I did. It was at the Forge Winery in Homestead, and they did some German covers of songs, which are interesting.
Did Rammstein play?
They did not. Okay. It was the Autobahn band. And we also had some German food, and I got drunk on wine. So
you don't get drunk.
I mean,
I've never known you to get. You're just trying to sound cool like Keith and I when you talk about getting drunk.
I get wine drunk.
Were the Scorpions there by any chance? Was Claus Main there?
No. Although, no. I don't know. He might have been hiding under the table. He's little.
He's a little dude, yeah. He probably was, you know, underneath the tree.
No, except?
No.
Neither? Wow.
No. Just Audubon.
That's awful. Okay, guys, so we have Lily, we've got Keith, we've got the Hawk, and we've got a great show. We are talking about vulgar display of power. This is Pantera's biggest selling album. Those of you who are on the mailing list, and if you want to know more about that, go to lulumbardimusic.com. You found out an interesting fact about the album already. You got a sneak peek at something we're going to discuss on today's podcast. But I'm going to go ahead and let Lily, you want to give a kind of maybe brief synopsis
yes.
Of the vulgar display before we jump in full force here.
Yes. Okay, so sixth studio album by Pantera, released in February of 1992. One of the most influential heavy metal albums of the 90s. It spawned four singles, Mouth for War, This Love, Hollow, and Walk. Drummer Vinnie Paul said that the Cowboys from Hell was really close to the definitive Pantera sound, but they wanted to make the heaviest record of all time, which is, I think, which is something they succeeded with, Vulgar Display of Power. So, good stuff. There is an unheard track that didn't come out till 2012 called Piss, which is not on my track listing for the evening, but I, you know, because it's not on the original. Received critical acclaim. Many critics have praised Daryl's guitar work on the album and his heavy riffs and tones, and it does set the tone for the album. Did peak at number 44, and it is their best-selling album of all time. Went double platinum.
Wow. So, good stuff,
fancy
Will.
Stuff.
Good stuff. So, who wants to start? We have this sort of backup background of it. You guys want to go? Why don't you guys want to go track by track and talk about each song?
Sure,
we could do that. I mean, I got some other little factoids that I'm, you know.
Go ahead, Keith. Go ahead.
Can be discussed.
Let's throw some factoids at us, buddy.
Let's discuss something that which I never really knew the true story behind, but as in a little research, let's discuss the cover of the album.
Yes,
it's a very interesting cover. Someone getting punched in the face. And it looks pretty real, but it was a urban legend or just a old tale out of school, we'll say, of that person actually being punched in the face 31 times, being paid a whopping freaking $10 a pop, if you excuse the pun. But I think that's, after reading a little bit, I think that's bullshit. That's kind of not true.
Yeah, they debunked that and said it was an actor. The guy who took the photo said it was just an actor.
No, the
dude wasn't even being. He wasn't even punched. The things they can do. Yeah.
No harm. No faces were harmed in the making of this album. Vinnie Paul liked to tell that story that you know the guy got paid $10 and all that stuff per punch, but this is the kind of like I don't know. It's a kind of fun story to sort of spread right about your album.
I mean, that,
why not?
That might may. Make more sales. Who knows?
If you interesting story, you know. But I mean, I never really knew if it was true or false. But after reading a little bit about it, it's definitely it's a non-fact. So it's we're just going to go with it. But if you want to believe it, then it's up to you.
Another cool thing is the title was actually taken from a line in The Exorcist from 1973. I thought that was cool. I didn't know that till I read about it yesterday.
If you're on my mailing list, you would have got an email where I said
I'm not on your mailing list.
The devil named Pantera's album.
No, I'm not on your mailing
list. And when the priest asked Regan McNeil, why don't you just break the straps if you're the devil? And he would see that would be way too much a vulgar display of power.
Right, legit.
And that is freaking cool. Just that alone. If the album sucked, that'd be like, it's still a cool name. Cool album name. But it doesn't suck.
I mean, I like when bands incorporate things like horror into their albums or stories. That makes it fun for me. And this is one of them, so yay.
This is true. I think those two go hand in hand, horror and metal. It's just,
yeah,
you know,
it's kind of like a thing.
This is a love relationship because, you know, there's many people that just write songs about, you know, the horror genre, which is most, I think most metalheads do like a little horror once in a while. That's horror with an H, in case you get.
You know what's funny is I have actually interviewed a bunch of metal bands, like you know, unsigned bands who actually don't even watch horror, because I'll ask them sometimes, "What's your favorite scary movie?" And they're like, oh, we don't watch that stuff. I'm like, what? That makes zero sense. But all right, cool.
Crazy. I mean,
then what's your favorite movie?
If they say old Yeller or some light-hearted Disney shit, then I'm going to have to talk to them.
It's never been something that soft. It's like Pulp Fiction or something, you know, usually typical like that. But it's, yeah, it was just surprising when I get that. And I get that more often than not. Which is sort of surprising.
another little factoid, if you got a minute. Is the song By Demons Be Driven actually appeared in a movie in 2015 called The Big Short.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I saw that movie.
Christian Bale actually learned the drum part because there's a... I've never seen it. I'm just going on what I read here. Christian Bale had actually learned the actual drum part of the song for that role. So that's pretty interesting little tidbit there for you. It's Christian Bale. He's effing Batman. I mean, he can do whatever he wants. You know?
I think you'd like that movie. You should see it, Keith.
I'll check it out. It's one of the ones I've really never even heard of. I like Christian Bale and a lot of stuff he does, so it's probably something I would enjoy.
It's a four or five big name actor ensemble cast, and yeah, you might want to check it out.
What I think's interesting too about this album is when they promoted it, the tour was with Soundgarden and Skid Row. Like, how unmatched is that?
Yeah, that's I read that too. That's an odd little trifecta there. That's that's something we talked about long ago. Sometimes people just don't think before they just pair bands together on tours. They just want to make money and they say, hey, this is as close as we can get to
what you are
matching you up with somebody. No, another thing that surprised me is that it was their sixth studio album.
Yeah, but only their second one, you know.
Yeah, so I mean, I think Pantera is definitely, like you said, one of the greatest metal bands of all time. And I think this album is one of the greatest metal albums of all time. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I've never heard anything prior to Cowboys. I know it was a different vibe and a different sound. I mean, I think that they were even going for more of a Van Halen / Kiss, almost like...
They were sort of glammy.
That's what I gather. That's just from reading it. I've never heard any of that stuff. To the point where I think I purposely haven't listened to it just so it doesn't ruin my opinion of them.
That's probably for the best because
Have you ever heard any of it?
I have. Okay, so before they changed their name to Pantera, they were called something else for a couple of songs, and I cannot think of it right now. I'm looking it up as we speak because one of the songs was in a movie I used to watch as a kid all the time. What were they called? Dead Green Mummies. And this was when they were sort of glammy. So the song is Proud to Be Loud, and it is very, Motley Crue sort of streaming into Van Halen sound. So if you listen to anything...
Now, is this the same members? Was Phil Anselmo the singer in this?
That I don't know, because I didn't look that up. But when I looked up... Because I didn't know who the Dead Green Mummies were, so I looked them up, and it's like, oh, it's just basically Pantera. I'm like, oh, okay. Because I'd never heard of who this was, because I wanted to know who did that song from that movie. So I didn't actually look up the members, but it's just Pantera with a different name. I'm like, okay.
I don't know. But I don't know. Like, I know Phil Anselmo, because I met a guy here a while ago that claimed to know Phil Anselmo, and he's, from the New Orleans area, and he just says that Phil would just show up at somebody's random house party when Pantera was, huge and just, just talk shit and just be all crazy, just like a regular dude. But he basically just kind of worked his ass off until we got the Pantera gig, so...
It is. Oh, my God. It really is with Phil.
Wow. That's something.
Yeah.
another thing that I wanted to talk to you guys about, because I think this is this would have been... What year was this? 92, right?
92.
Okay. So before the album was released, while they were recording it in 91, they got a call and said, how do you guys feel? I know you're recording an album and everything, but how do you guys feel about coming to Russia and playing a show with Metallica and AC/DC? Could you imagine? They played, I believe the crowd was a million people. It's one of the biggest rock concerts of all time.
I mean, I wouldn't say no.
And so they took this little break while they were making their album, and they go to Russia. And, this is just a few years or so after the fall of the of communism in Russia, and these people are like starving for rock and roll. And could you imagine that show? Metallica. These are like all guys are all in their prime too. Metallica and AC/DC are still like AC/DC. Even in the early 90s, was still, you know, they were still real force to be reckoned with. They'd, you know, they were by no means like forgotten or anything. And then Pantera.
Yeah.
My God. I mean, that's, you know, that has to be like the greatest show you could think of to go to if you love heavy rock.
I wonder if there's any footage from that anywhere.
I believe it is called Let There Be Rock or something like that. And I believe there is a concert video of it.
Sweet. I have to look that up.
I believe I heard Vinnie Paul talking about it. But so, you know, and then when they come back from this, you know, huge thing, because they were not really well. They had toured Europe before and they weren't really well liked. The people didn't know how to take them. They didn't know what they were, where they were coming from. Didn't understand them. I guess they were kind of considered a little bit of kind of rednecks because they were from Texas and things like that. Mm. But they just absolutely slayed at this show. I mean, it was like freaking legendary, and it really charged their back.
But Gorky Park, for Christ's sake, yeah, in Russia.
Yeah, and it was a giant success, and it really like charged their batteries. They were like, you know, they were like kids at Christmas when they got back to the studio, and it really kind of fueled their desire to like just get in there and make this amazing album.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Cool stuff.
So what do you got?
We don't want to do the tracks now.
Are you guys ready to do the tracks? You want to talk about anything else about the album?
I wanted to give it. I always love to do this producer thing. It was produced by Terry Date, who's like a master metal producer, and he worked on several of their other albums too. I mean, the Great Southern Trendkiller. Pretty sure he did Far Beyond Driven. Don't quote me on it if he did Cowboys, but he definitely did several of their albums, and he gets that metal sound, man.
He did work on Cowboys.
Yeah, that's another thing too, that to get a little musical nerdish about. I'll be quick though, and you might even find this interesting, Lou. Did you ever notice that when there's a solo going on, there's no real rhythm guitar track in the background?
Right, they did not put in rhythm guitar. It was one thing that was everybody knew was they would not put rhythm guitar in because they want it to be more like how they played live where there was no rhythm guitar. Yeah,
that's what I'm thinking, because I'm listening to it and I think that they've done this on probably, I'm not saying on, you know, maybe they've done it on all their albums. I guess I haven't paid attention enough to where it's like, yeah, when you hear like he starts doing his solo thing and all of a sudden all you hear is the rhythm section in the background. It's very interesting because there's nothing to like really, I mean, even though it's heavy as hell, you would think that a rhythm guitar track would just make it heavier and give that killer sound and give it more thickness, but it's like, it's interesting to hear how there's really never any rhythm guitar track in the background.
Well, I think what I like about that too is it makes it really stand out. It also makes Daryl's solos really stand out. I mean, I think the more bands need to consider this, because it really makes a solo pop, because there's no other guitar, no other like that, no other sound taking up that sonic space. So all of a sudden, that's all you've got. It's like the lead vocal there. And I think this is one of the reasons why Daryl rose to such acclaim as a guitar player, and even to this day is so venerated. I mean, he is definitely one of like the metal gods. He's one of the guys that just like so many people try to emulate, you know, so many students want to learn how to play like, etc. The other thing I like about that is you can really hear Rex's bass tone when that happens. And you go like, oh, no, there's bass. Because sometimes it's a little questionable.
That's the thing that's cool about it, where like a lot of bands just don't take that approach. But at the same time, it's like, it's definitely interesting because not only did I think he was a great guitar player, but I think that his solos are always very interesting. It's not just like a shred to shred kind of thing a lot of times. He just does interesting like scales and just very interesting harmonics, and his use of like just layered, the cool layered sound word of the solo in the song is actually, whether you're a guitar player or not, I'm a freaking drummer, and I listen to these guitar solos and I just think they're captivating.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a monster. The other thing about Daryl, real quick, is while a lot of guys during that era of metal were, you know, sort of taking the you know, sort of neoclassical kind of approach, a lot of minor scales, harmonic minor scales, real dramatic stuff. Daryl's playing, and when you strip it down, is essentially he's playing the blues. It's very much blues-based, stuff that he's doing. And that's another thing that I think it really kind of makes him really stand out. He's shredding his guts out, but it's basically he's playing the blues. And I think that's a lesson that maybe some modern bands might want to think about. So just say that. So are you guys ready to get into the track? I'm not trying to push you guys. If you want to get into the tracks, you want to talk about something else, I'm cool.
No, I think that, you know, before we get into the tracks, I think that this album came along at a great time because I think that I'm not exactly sure of the date. I mean, I should be slapped with where the Black Album came up. Metallica kind of left a void for metal, I think. When they did the Black Album, I think that they were laughing all the way to the bank, but that was a lot more commercial, and it made metal go to more of a mainstream where they're, I think, genuine metalheads started just disowning Metallica at that point, and they needed something to, like, rescue them. And this album probably in a lot of ways was like a savior for metal. It was just an album that came out and ripped your freaking head off.
I agree with that.
It rips your head off for sure, and it does step in and fill a gap. You're absolutely right.
Was there because I mean the kings of metal, you know, probably will arguably always be Metallica, but it's a thing where a band comes along like Pantera and they're just raw. They're not going, and them, and like I put Slayer in that category too, where they just march to their own drummer. You know what I mean? It's like they do their thing. They're not going to strip it down and do what the masses want, but they're still appealing to people enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so. It's also have also a lot of bands took the Pantera sound and went and did their own thing with it. I don't think anybody did it as well as Pantera. Because as heavy as it is, and I remember the first time I heard them was the Cowboys from Hell album, and just thinking like, oh my God, like they sound so heavy, those vocals are so extreme, and now you listen to now what came, you know, years later with extreme metal, but I felt like what those guys did, that all the music is still like at the core of it, and I don't want metalheads to get mad at me, at the core of it is good pop songwriting. There's still like hooks and choruses, and you can understand the lyrics, and you can get on to what he's doing, and you can chant or sing along or holler along, whatever it is, whatever you want to call
whatever
that thing
doing.
That he does, you know. And I think that's something that I think a lot of metal forgot. That you still, where's the song? We still need the freaking song. And this album is just full of great songs. Oh, so great segue into the songs. whoever wants to start. I'm here for you.
Mouth
for War.
The first single off the album. I think it's a great starter. Was released as downloadable content for music video games, Rock Revolution and Rock Band 3. Vocalist Phil stated that it's about channeling your hate into something productive. Also, according to Phil, the song was written about the then middleweight champion James Toney. I don't know what that means. The video shows the band playing the song to the audience, and a majority of the video is shot in black and white. And a screenshot of the video was used as the cover for Walk. It is one of their most popular songs, and it had moderate commercial success. I mean, it was one of their singles, so, and it was the first song to ever chart. And it was used as the theme song for Headbangers Ball.
Oh, that's a cool little fact.
That's actually where I first saw the song at. So that opened up my little synopsis of the tune by saying that I was aware of Pantera from Cowboys from Hell. But when an album comes out where I wasn't familiar with the prior, you know, more glam rock albums. So I'm thinking this is their second album. And I'm like, damn, they're not having the sophomore drinks at this point. But it's not. Sixth album. But at this point, they're coming out. I see the video for it, and it's just it's slaying. And they use, and I'll probably repeat myself on this a few times, I think this is metal 101. They use the tricks of the metal trade in this song, and they do it through most of the album and through most of their career, where a lot of this stuff goes from that slow, sludgy halftime feel to kicks it up into a double time feel at the end. It's almost like you would think another chorus would come in at the end, but it doesn't. It kicks into this double time feel and just slaughters you through the, you know, hits you like a freaking sledgehammer and goes out and the song's done. It's, none of these songs are super long because they're keeping that almost commercial sensibility to it. But, and there's not really any, not a lot of cussing in this, but I think that later on as you get through the album that Phil Anselmo's school of lyric writing is mandatory. You must at least say one swear word in the song.
Yeah, I wanted to say real quick that if you if you listen, like I was listening to it on YouTube Music before, we, and every song has a little E. Every single one has a little E, like, next to it.
It's mandatory that he, you know, if he's writing all the lyrics, which I think he was responsible for, if not all the lyrics, most of them, he's definitely coming from, like, I'm pissed about something, so I'm going to say an F-bomb here, you know, this. And I mean, there's a lot of cussing going on, and I think that's where he's coming from. It's just a his vibe, you know, where he has to cuss somewhere in the song.
I did read somewhere that there is a whole article about him and why he's so angry. Cannot remember what it's called, like, the where it's at now. I should have written it down, but it was an interesting article because it
goes. Can you give us a little synopsis?
Just basically, it's from the. He wasn't really angry.
It's when like
he
telling was, the audience, yeah, we know why he's angry, but we're not going to tell you.
Well, you know, you could read the article yourself.
Well, you don't even know where it is. You can't even tell me.
I don't remember where it's at, but it was from the point of view of the other band members, and they were always saying things like he wasn't angry when he was writing the music. He was just sort of getting the anger out that he felt inside, but he always said he wasn't angry while writing, just angry at everything else. This is basically what it summed up to.
He's an angry man.
It was a very interesting article. I wish I remembered to write that down though.
Well, see,
next time.
Next, when we talk about Pantera next, whenever we talk about Pantera again. Which
sure,
is,
if I look
you'll have
for
to
it,
bring that.
It.
You'll have to bring that. That'll be your assignment for next week, Lily. Okay. Is to bring that article to the podcast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe we'll see. I probably won't remember to do that.
Terry Date said that I heard conflicting stories. This just goes back to the anger. Terry Date said that he does not recall Phil Anselmo breaking any stools in the studio. However, Phil said that he broke tons of stools. He says that, you know, and it's a, there's an interview with him on Loudwire or one of the stations where he says, you know, it's frustrating. You know what you want and you're just trying to get your voice to do it. And as a singer, I completely understand that thing. But as a singer, I have no clue what Phil is doing vocally. It sounds impossible.
Really?
It really sounds completely impossible. Like,
I mean, I don't
like
sing.
What
I don't
he's
really
doing.
Consider, like, a lot of times what he does is actual singing. There's a couple of songs but dude, before getting to the album, but it's just like a lot of just, I don't know, he's just
But if he was just yelling, I can yell, you could yell, Lily can yell. Nobody can do what it's very hard to do what he does. That is a different, what he's doing is musical. It's just extreme and it's very, very difficult, and I would be very, as a singer, I got to tell you, I have no clue.
I don't know. The dude has to blow his voice out, and I don't even know how he gets through the album.
Yeah, I don't know if he blows his voice out. I don't think that he does, because they tour, and he sounds pretty consistent. He has good nights and bad nights, but he's able to do that. There is entire courses on that type of extreme singing, and it's not yelling. They do something with their voices. I don't want to get into the technicality of it right now, because I'd be talking out my ass because I don't completely know it. But just as a singer, I'm a singer who studied guys like Joe Lynn Turner and Lou Gramm and Robert Plant, and those are kind of like my guys. This guy has no clue what he's doing.
Yeah, that's textbook singing. You're going to go back to the, you know, if you're a rock guy, you're going to listen to the Robert Plants and the, you know, Dickinson's, Rob Halford, Joe Lynn Turner, all these great, you know, Graham Bonnet's a great singer. I mean, the Freddie Mercury's of the world. But I think these guys, where you get guys like Phil Anselmo, they're doing something different. And I think later on, Jonathan Davis from Korn took that shit even further with that wacky stuff he was doing on the first record. But yeah, there's a lot of just where even David Draymond from Disturbed said it. He doesn't come from like a typical metal vocalist background. He thinks about reggae music when he's writing songs.
Wow.
So if you listen to Disturbed, he has a very like almost like a white dude reggae thing going on at times.
Interesting.
He's just, yeah, that's where, I mean, that came from his own mouth. So I mean, like I said, it's it's only going to be done for so long, and someone's going to do something different with it. So
Very cool. I mean, it's one of the things that really sets Banter apart. Okay, we talked about one song for like 10 minutes. Let's move on to the next song. Keith, do you want to comment? What's the next song, Lil?
A New Level.
Do you want to talk about A New Level? Do you have any comments?
Yeah, I'm going to have to move some furniture and shit in my house, because I'll tell you what, this song, man, I'll bust some shit up if I hear this song. I mean, this song today, I'm hearing this, I almost flipped the freaking table over, because this song will just get your adrenaline flowing. You could be half in a coma and you can listen to this song and your ass will snap right out of it. So if you know anybody that's doing bad, play this song for them and they'll pop right out of it. I think this is one of the greatest metal riffs of all time. This song's so heavy, it's just, you know, it's killing. And I think, you know, if you'd have put this song anywhere in the album, it's just going to be an eye-opener, man. I can't believe this song wasn't like the debut single, like the first single off, to be honest. I mean, this song has everything that you would want in a metal song. And I mean, it's... And if you can't get fired up out of listening to this dude, you might want to check your freaking pulse, man.
We have any factoids or anything on it, Lil?
They said it was written to be performed live. They wanted to make a statement musically that would coincide with the live show that they do, because they have a ton of energy at their shows. And this is an in-your-face song. So, and it does feature the lyrics Vulgar Power, which is a reference to the album title.
Nice. Next track.
Walk.
Oh, Walk On Home, boy.
Basically, Dime played the riff at a sound check during the tour for Cowboys from Hell, and the rest of the band loved it, so that's sort of where the song spawned from. Vocalist Phil said that the message of the song was take your effing attitude and take an effing walk with that. Keep that shit away from me. His message was aimed at friends who treated the band differently when they arrived home after touring for Cowboys from Hell, thinking they were posers and... Now they're, you know, sellouts, blah, 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 whatever.
They are sellouts. I'm just kidding.
No. They're awesome.
Love that band.
And that also came with about like 4 or 5 remixes on EPs, all released in like 93. They did a Japanese one called Just Walk, then Walk Biomechanical, that contains 4 songs from Vulgar Display. The first are two are album versions, while the second 2 have been remixed. There's Walk Live Material, which is a 12-inch vinyl-only release, which would be something cool for collectors to find if you can. And then, what's the other one? Walk Cervical, which contains...
Cervical?
That's what it said. 4 songs from the Vulgar Display of Power, the first 2 album versions, while the second 2 have been remixed and renamed by J.G. Thirlwell of Foetus.
And it comes with a free speculum.
Probably. That's the scariest thing in the world.
It says Pantera logo.
You know what? I would collect that. I don't even care. I would put that in my case of stuff.
Oh, you want to talk about Walk?
There's a lot of detail on one song, man. I'll tell you, this song might take 20 minutes. I think this is a big one of their, probably, if you speak of Pantera and even like in passing and just kind of know a little bit about them, this song just comes up. I think the actual riff itself is the hook of the song. Obviously, Phil's, you know, lyrics are always dealing with something he's going through or wanting to get out. So I think one of the cool things, and I'll nerd out for a second again, is if any Paul's ability to just play a simple groove throughout most of the song, just a simple backbeat groove, and it just makes the song like almost have a pop sensibility to it, which it's not. But I mean, it's one of those songs that you just have to be. I think it's, like I said, his guitar tone, Daryl's guitar tone, is just sucks you in too. I mean, he has some interesting, the tone of his guitar just sounds like nobody else's. And I think this song, starting with that riff, is just that catchy hook, but it's that guitar tone is too, is just, you know, it just sucks you in, man.
They felt that heavy metal should sound like a machine. And so what they were going through for with the guitar was a kind of chainsaw. And I think they completely achieved it. Walk was the song that really kind of like sold me on Pantera because that came on the radio on Quick Rock out of Johnstown. I was driving home from rehearsal one night and that came on and I was like, what the is this? Oh my God. And just the whole thing just blew my mind. And I insisted that the band I was in learn it. And even though we had a female singer and she was no Phil Anselmo, but We did it. We did it poorly. I mean, we grooved it, and put our ass into it. But it was just a tribute to. We all loved the song, mm-hmm. and we're so floored by Pantera, even though we really could, that wasn't our genre. But we just loved it, and it didn't matter because when you started that riff, people lost their minds. You'd be in some shithole redneck bar and you'd be playing that song, it wouldn't matter, everybody would like start flipping out. And I remember playing a gig, we did that song and somebody stood up and flipped the table over and like nobody bounced them out or anything. People went freaking nuts. It was awesome. We didn't even do it well.
There are those songs that strike those chords.
It's just an amazing song. So not to take anything away from Walk, but let's walk on to the next track, Lily.
I know it's a family show, but fucking Hostile is the next song.
What? Watch that language.
One of the more well-known songs on the album. It's in your face, to the point, lashing out on authority figures. Very metal, very Phil. That's what I got.
You want to talk about Effing Hostile?
Yeah, man, this song is definitely, it's like you said, it's a straight-ahead metal classic. It's in your face. He's pissed. I mean, it's got all the Pantera elements on full display. I think the song comes in and it just doesn't really chill. There's no real mellow breakdown in the song. It's all the way from start to finish. In less than 4 minutes, it's like a pile driver. So,
just a quick note about the production. Phil sang it in the control room. With Terry, kind of encouraging him as he was going. He held the microphone with his hand, which not a lot of sing. Usually in the studio, you have the mic on a stand because you don't want noises and stuff. Anthony Akitas from Red Hot Chili Peppers holds the microphone and sings into it as well. But they did this on this song, and when they got the take, Phil was like so like combination of anger, frustration, and relief. He threw the microphone down and it went into the garbage. And there was barbecue wrap, like barbecue sauce stuff in there and everything. And that's that feedback here at the end is the mic going into the garbage can.
Yeah, I think he just broke the damn thing.
Just threw it right into the garbage can and it fed back and they kept it and it just made the whole track. So.
And that's what barbecue sauce sounds like.
Yep, that's what barbecue sauce sounds like on a Pantera song. What's next?
I can
see why you think Akitas does that though.
Yeah.
This Love.
I love this song.
Vinnie Paul said that the song was about a relationship Phil was in previously. Pretty much the story of a relationship he'd been in. He was really mad about it. Phil used to call the girl clingy. That doesn't ever happen. Come on.
There's no such thing as clingy women. Women are perfect. Women never do anything wrong, right?
Right. Well, I don't.
We got stage 5 clinger right now.
Corporal Clinger.
One of the band's most well-known songs, of course. It starts sort of pretty elegant, and then it erupts to a sort of mad craziness bar brawl song.
It's got a great riff. That mellow thing he does at the beginning is really, but it's still creepy and spooky. Got that really like cool thing that I think that Metallica ripped off for Enter Sandman.
Legit.
It's kind of like slowed down Enter Sandman. It's the same kind. I'm lying.
Yeah,
I don't know.
The song has a cool vibe. I think it almost has like an Alice in Chains vibe. He's actually singing on the song. I mean, until the middle where he screams his ass off. But I mean, wouldn't be Pantera without Phil screaming. I mean, that's his middle name, Phil Screaming Song.
That's his signature.
Well, Phil can do traditional singing too.
He can sing.
You ever heard their version of Planet Caravan?
It's
killer.
Oh yeah, that's great. It's great. Definitely great. I think that there's a couple songs on the album that he actually does vocally sing instead of just. But a lot of these songs are pretty much the vocal style is going to rend them. So if you're not going to sing some lullaby shit to like a new level, which is not going to happen.
Exactly. Anyways, great track. I love when it kicks in. This is a favorite on Ozzy's Boneyard on Sirius. They play it all the time, and I always crank it. Great track.
Good
stuff. What's next?
Rise. A political song that encourages people to stand up for what's right in the world and not succumb to hate. Right. One of the most extreme songs off the album. It does have some of the heaviest work that Dimebag's done. Overall, and then Phil's signature aggressive vocals kick in, and there's that song.
Great riff. I love this song. kick ass. What do you got, Keith? Any
it's
comments?
Great.
On
that? It's a great. It's a, like I said, all my notes here. It's just a thrashing good time, man. And it asks the question in the song, "What's wrong with your mind?" Because don't answer that. But I mean, it's definitely something a lot of people want to ask. But it's a song that's gonna, once again, start to finish, it's gonna hit you in the face the whole time. So it's you're gonna look like the dude off the album cover.
Yeah.
All right. What's the next track?
No Good, Attack the Radical. This is actually one of the demos that was created prior to recording the album. The others included A New Level, Regular People, and No Good. This song is talking about Phil's true opinion on racism in the United States after he was accused of being racist. He sort of wanted to get that message out there. It sort of tells you to look beyond your eyes and see past the color of everyone's skin. So,
something that maybe would do good to pay attention to these days,
yeah.
Maybe?
That's a good message.
I'm just saying, maybe something you want to think about. Any comments on Attack the Radical?
It's definitely like, as I heard from the lyrics too, I didn't read up on it too much, but just listen to the lyrics. It's definitely like that anti-racism song. I mean, he's a white guy from the South, so maybe you get that label once in a while, but it's another song that just comes in, and it's got some talking vocals, we'll say. It's more talking vocals in the beginning. And then it just starts to explode into like him just getting it all out once again. He's just getting it all out on this album.
It's unfortunate because even recently, you know, I've seen articles pop up and people make comments that, oh, you know, Phil's a racist and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, I've seen a whole bunch of them.
People still bring it up. Nobody wants to let that stuff die. So just tell people, listen to No Good, Attack the Radical, and that'd be the end of that story. What's next?
And boom goes the dynamite. Live in a Hole. Songs about the struggles of individuals over...
You said hole.
Hole. With overwhelming social anxiety. In the song, they're choosing to isolate themselves because it's the only answer and seems to work, but it doesn't really work because there's still your insides, like, struggling. So it's like a never-ending sort of cycle of crap, and I can really relate to it because that's something I used to have several years ago, probably like 15 years ago, so... I've had social anxiety, and now I'm cured because obviously I do this stuff and very social butterfly. But it is a great song to listen to, sort of to get a grip on the struggle, I think.
The struggle is real. Any comments, Hawk?
Of course. This song has very several cool riff changes, and it's just moody changes. I mean, the song starts with a ripping ass guitar solo. It's got some cool start stop, I like to call vocals, where just like an in and out. Very, like, just right on point. This song, I don't know how many takes it took him to get it, but this song is tight, and it's, you know, it's one of them songs I think just kind of flies under the radar. It's not going to be, you know, it's not the huge hit off the album, but it's one of them songs where I think it's just very precise in its delivery, and it's another just classic tune that probably is more of a B-side, but I think sometimes B-sides should be A.
Yeah, I think this album is pretty much all killer, no filler for the most part. Like, there's really, I don't really hear any, like, places where they were kind of like, okay, well, they just put this in to fill up time. I mean, there's a shit ton of songs on this
album.
Yeah,
there's three more.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of songs. This isn't some, like, you know, one of, you know, nine songs.
This isn't a cash grabs, like, album where you put, like, 10 songs, you're done.
Yeah. Oh, what do you got next?
Regular People. Basically, what I get from this song is Phil saying, screw the status quo, and everyone who's a poser needs to be pretty much put in their place. And you lose.
Hey.
Straw. Hawk.
He said, in this song, he says, I'll crush your rush. I rule you, fool. I mean, he's just definitely writing those kind of Phil's almost style lyrics where he's telling it like it is, and he's pissed about something. I think this is probably one of my more favorite tracks on the album. I just like the aggressiveness in it. Not that all the other songs aren't, but it's just that it's definitely a pissed off song, and I think that he delivers his point on this one.
Great track. What do you got? What's the next one?
By Demons Be Driven. This is sort of like a deep cut. This isn't like one of the more popular songs, I guess. I mean, I still like the song, and I don't think it's a bad song at all. It shows the band still can function perfectly together. The lyrics are a little bit like I don't understand what the lyrics mean, so I guess vague is the word I'm going for, but it seems I see a little bit of religion in there, but I don't want to speculate and say that's what it's about because I don't know.
You got anything on this one, Keith?
Oh, Christian Bale playing drums. I don't know the exact meaning behind the song. It's got just another one of them ones that has a cool halftime vibe in it. So, I mean, it's this one of the metal 101 songs written how just make stuff real heavy and sludgy is do the halftime every time.
One of the things I loved about Pantera, and they demonstrated on this song, Walks, and the other ones, is their ability to play something that grooves. Mm-hmm. Just is really, really in the pocket. Even when they are playing fast, they're still really, really tight, but I think sometimes it really comes out better. Some of the lyrics on this is religion is old for drawing the young, purity withers and dies, never return to the ones that provided, children draining parents of will, I hold out my hand to bloodless child, I'm taken by the one I was saving from death, by demons be driven, beckon the call. If you know what that means, let us know.
It's cryptic, I'm sorry, I don't know.
No idea. What's going on there? But that's okay.
It's hard to get into the mind of these people sometimes.
Another thing that I would just give you guys a little bit of musical education here is a certain approach to songwriting sometimes is not so much to try to say a message or tell a story, but to just try to put cool imagery together or put words together that sound cool or evoke an idea. And sometimes that's all you need. And that is what I'm seeing here on By Demons Be Driven. All right, so we got one more, right?
Hollow.
Power ballad. Down there in a hollow.
Power ballad to end out the album. It's supposed to be a reflection on a friend who has slipped into a coma. They said it was not about any specific person, but a series of losses that he had suffered. He's got a much softer voice in the beginning of the song as opposed to the rest of the album. Actually, the vocals are similar to Cemetery Gates. Off of Cowboys.
That's right. That's the song I was singing, yeah.
And it actually is one of the most well-known Pantera songs, but it never charted. Sadly.
Make me cry.
It's definitely a power ballad type song. You know?
Yeah. When it comes on, my reaction is always and now for something completely different.
Right.
Because this is completely different.
Singing on the beginning of the song. This is probably his most singing track on the record.
Yeah.
He definitely sings more on this record. It's definitely about a loss. If you say it's not about nobody in particular, but it is, you can hear it in the lyrics and just the pain that people feel when they lose whoever.
That's right. We are not going to rank the tracks because it's just a great album top to bottom and it's kind of silly. But I think that we have some comments.
We do.
We'll give a few shout outs.
Chris Thunderwolf also said Corey Taylor was born on this day.
Well, we were going to get to that.
Right. Dimebag was going by Diamond Daryl, then switched when it got heavier. It actually is credited on the album as Diamond. Joe Freeman shared, looks like a YouTube video from the 1991 Monsters of Rock tour, which they were on. Chris Thunderwolf said he saw them 5 times. And By Demons, primarily he's taking a rebellious tone against religion and its ineffectiveness at drawing today's youth. By Demons Be Driven is a song showing us that evil, drugs, bad qualities of man are more enticing and accepted than religion. They are the driving force behind people similar to him. Of course, Phil was a big junkie, so it's kind of interpreting his distorted view of life because he was surrounded by users and seen how difficult life can be, and that's totally understandable. Overall, I think this is one of the best tunes by Pantera.
He definitely struggled with heroin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had definitely some substance problems. That's something I've always heard about him. So that's something that maybe his pain was in his lyrics there.
I did hear this. There was talk before the scamdemic got into full swing of, and Keith, I'm just throwing this out at you, brother, and Lily too, as a fellow musician, that there was going to be a sort of Pantera, not reunion, but a Pantera sort of tribute tour with Phil and Rex and Zakk Wylde on guitar and your boy, Mike Portnoy, on drums. What,
why
you want
to
make
there
any
somebody fucking some void to fill? This dude just comes out of the woodwork and wants to fill everybody's drum machine. Jesus Christ, give it a rest, man.
He wants to stay valid.
I brought it up because I knew you'd have something to say about Portnoy.
I knew you would. I always heard that, like, even when Vinnie Paul and Dimebag were still around, I mean, I always heard that they had, like, in-and-out relationships with Phil, man. Phil struggled with, you know, heroin things for a year, and he just became a complete monster at times. And I think that, I'm not saying Vinnie Paul and Daryl didn't party, but I don't think anybody in that band partied to the extent of Phil. And I think that it was hard. It's probably hard to deal with an addict like that. So I just don't want to find out.
Heroin, man. There's a reason why they call it the dragon or whatever. Yeah. I mean, like,
you're dancing with the devil, man.
Yeah, it's really, that's a whole other level, man. That's just a whole other level. So I hope that it stays clean and he's okay. And everything. It's just tragic. And speaking of tragedies, yay! It's tragedy time. You guys ready to hear about some cool... Oh, real quick. You know, you guys... a lot of people... you hear the... We talked about the genres of metal a couple years ago. We did a thing on that. And one of them is power metal. Well, Pantera invented power metal.
Yeah.
And they had an album called power metal. So these guys are the kings of power metal. So... put that in your pipe and smoke it.
From like 1988.
That's right. On this day, we mentioned that this was the passing of John Lennon and the passing, of course, of Daryl Abbott, a.k.a. Dimebag Daryl. On this day in 1979, Styx went to number one with the song that Tommy Shaw absolutely hates.
Oh, I hate this song.
Babe. And famously, Tommy Shaw said, I didn't think we needed to play Barry Manilow songs. on this day in 1984, oh, yeah. Lily, Vince Neil from Motley Crue was involved in a car accident in Redondo Beach, California, which killed Nick Dingley?
Razzle.
Razzle.
We know him as Razzle.
Hanoi Rocks.
We'll just go with Razzle.
His name was Dingley, so that's why he went by Razzle. I don't blame him.
British.
Injured two other passengers. Neil was later sentenced to 30 days in jail, 5 years probation, $2.6 million in restitution. Wow. Good thing he was in a successful band.
He got out of jail after 15 days.
Courtney Love in 1995 appeared on ABC TV, Most Fascinating People, telling the presenter that she wished she had gone 8,000 million different things differently to have prevented the death of her husband, Kurt Cobain.
Oh, you mean like paying somebody off?
Yeah, so I wish I wouldn't have paid that guy to kill him. You know, that's one of
those. She killed him, didn't she kill him?
Yeah, she killed him.
I knew it.
Oh, man.
Easily, I mean, do you own a handgun now? You can easily wipe prints off a gun, man. I've never done it, but I'm just saying.
let me see what else happened. This day in 2016, Mick Jagger became a father again at the age of 73.
Jesus.
Wow.
To a 29-year-old girl.
At the age of 115, he's in heaven.
happy birthdays to Jim Morrison of the Doors.
He looks great for his age.
Happy birthday to Greg Allman.
Another one looks great for his age.
Wow.
Happy birthday to Dan Hartman. Go ahead and say it.
Keith, I don't even know who that is.
You know Dan Hartman. I can dream about you if I can't hold you. Yeah, he's a songwriter. A lot of people did his songs.
The fact that you know that is messed up.
Yep, he's a songwriter. Phil Collin from Def Leppard.
Now, he does look good for his age, and he's alive.
He actually does. He's ripped.
This dude has a six-pack, and he's like 65 years old.
Marty Friedman, most famously of Megadeth.
Great show.
Been in a bunch of other stuff. Sinead O'Connor.
Well.
My God, everybody's parents were screwing and had rock star children. Corey Taylor. Happy birthday to him, too. So, all right, guys, that was this day in rock. I want to, speaking of this day in music, I really want to bring up something real quick. I am so happy. This was a tough year for everybody. But we did something awesome this year, Keith and Lily. We, every second week of the month, we did an album retrospective. And we have such awesome taste, Keith. Here are some of the albums that we discussed. Very eclectic, but yet all awesome records. Pyromania by Def Leppard.
Yeah.
Appetite for Destruction by Guns N' Roses. And then we switch gears for Bat Outta Hell by Meatloaf.
I forgot.
And then we switch gears again. Number of the Beast by Iron Maiden. Keith suggested this one right here, OK Computer by Radiohead.
That was one I was surprised we actually went through.
Yep. Shout at the Devil. Thank you, Lily. Van Halen, Van Halen. Right, that was the week before we lost Eddie. Then we had to do a show about Eddie.
I know.
Van Halen next
we
week.
Were super sad.
Sozo by Led Zeppelin. A Core by Stone Temple Pilots. And, of course, today we did. Today's December.
We did some good albums.
So this is the last album for the month, for the year that we're going to talk about. I think there's two missing from my list. I can't find them. But, you know, we have. I think that we covered a lot of Sonic territory. And I want you guys to let us know if something you want us to continue to do. I like these episodes because I learn a lot. And I remember a great record that I hadn't thought of in a long time. So if you guys don't have any objections, we're going to continue doing it, I think.
Yeah,
if you guys like
I like doing it. I think it's fun.
It's really cool. I really
I remember the one we did. You forgot was that Mel Tillis, the "Why Don't I Stutter When I Sing."
Nah, that's right. I can't believe I forgot that.
You damn know. It.
And we did Weird Al Yankovic's album, too. I can't remember. I think
Weird Al's dope, man.
I think for January, we'll do Buckwheat Zydeco.
I'll be sick.
I'm going to be sick that week. Oh,
I can't even
God.
Use my birthday as an excuse because my birthday's like 5 days before that.
So there's really, I want to say a couple of things that I have listened to now, the new AC/DC a couple of times. And, you know, hey, it's AC/DC.
Hey, it sounds like AC/DC.
It's them, for
you
sure.
You know, it sounds like AC/DC.
But it's nice that they reached number one. I thought that was very cool.
Yep. So, Keith, anything you want to, any of the final thoughts, anything you want to add before we wrap up for today?
You can just make four chords and one nice beat. You're good to go, man.
Okay.
Anybody's writing songs out there? Don't get fancy. Don't get fancy. Just keep it simple. People like simple. Nobody likes fancy.
That's
what I'm saying.
Keep it simple, stupid.
Unless you're a prog rock fan.
Unless you're Mike Portnoy.
He sounds better. He sounds better when he keeps it simple.
Yeah, Winery Dogs, right?
I think he sounds best playing like cover tunes or just straight ahead rock.
And Lily, you tell us about your show.
I have a show Thursdays, Hot Licks with Lily 6 at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Rock Rage Radio. You can download the app for free or go to rockrageradio.com. My 200th show is on my birthday, December 31st of this year.
Congratulations.
Oh, thanks.
200, man, that is something. Let's have a drink.
Okay. You don't have to twist my arm for that. And believe me, I'm not bragging or anything, but the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus has 624 episodes, 124,000 downloads. So thank you guys for supporting this. We really do appreciate
how
it.
How much?
We have 124,000 downloads, over 600 and some episodes.
How about that?
Yep. So there's a, you know, people are interested. You know, people are paying
attention.
I'm
still waiting for them to call me so I can get my big break.
But hey, do something for yourself this week. I'm gonna tell you what to do. I'm gonna just kind of leave you this thought. You know, we talked about these great albums: Zozo, Number of the Beast, Bat Outta Hell, OK Computer, Pyromania, Appetite for Destruction, Shout at the Devil, Van Halen, Core, Vulgar Display of Power. Take some time over the holidays, you know, and listen to some of them.
Revisit.
Just put
or
them on. You all out there either have YouTube Music or you have Spotify. And if you don't have either one of those, you can listen to them with commercials on YouTube. And I think you're going to be like, go back and you're going to go like, damn, I forgot about that song. Or that's really cool. I forgot they had done that. Or I forgot about the harmony in the third verse on that or whatever. It's just really good to reconnect with awesome music. 2021 is kind of come up fast, and there's new releases and all kind of stuff coming out. So we'll be giving you guys more information on that. I really want to give a shout out to my brother, Chris Thunderwolf Dodson at wolfscustoms.online. Do appreciate all the support you've given over the years. Do appreciate that, brother. And please check him out, wolfscustoms.online. Get a custom job done on your musical instruments. Rock Rage Radio, John, Gigi, you guys are awesome. You took a chance on us. You put us on. We do really appreciate appreciate it. And I love these two folks right here, right now. Keith the Hawk Hawkins and Lily V6. You guys are awesome. And I really don't ever want to do this show without you guys. You guys are just absolutely make it so much fun. So, guys, fans out there, check it out. Subscribe by going to lulambardimusic.com. You get a free EP, plus you get a lot of cool stuff. I don't send you guys garbage. I always send you really interesting, fascinating stuff. I ask questions and things like that. It's totally different kind of email list that you've ever been on. I promise you that. So check it out at lulambardimusic.com. Guys, we had a lot of fun tonight, and we're going to catch you guys all on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Keep on rocking, guys. See you next week.